McKeithen versus City of Richmond, R. Kevin Kennedy, Warner F. Young III, Appellant's Counsel, Gregory A. Lukanuski, Deputy City Attorney, Appellee's Counsel.
Good morning, may it please the court.
Hold up just a second, please, counsel. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, may it please the court. I'm Warner Young. I'm here with my co-counsel, Mr. R. Kevin Kennedy. We are here on behalf of the Caldwell Trust, Mr. McKeithen, the trustee. Caldwell Trust had a lien on a piece of property that was subject to a tax lien by the City of Richmond. That judgment lien was granted and is part of the protected privacy rights under the state of Virginia, particularly under Statute 801, 459, and 462, which established that a judgment lien is an interest in the property. Property rights include more than just an interest in the real estate. And while it is clear that a lien is not an interest in the actual real estate, it is an interest in property protected under both the U.S. Constitution, the Fifth Amendment, as well as the Virginia Constitution. It's also recognized throughout Virginia's history in the cases that have been cited in our brief, including the two administrator cases, McClanahan and Neff's administrator. In fact, in Neff's, the statement is that the judgment lien is a charge on the equity of a sale and that that is settled law.
Prior to your client having any type of executable interest, both the tax lien by statute, which goes to the first position, and the deed of trust in the first position must be satisfied, extinguished. They have to go away.
Correct.
It seems to me that the trial court made at least an implicit finding that the deed in first position was, the deed of trust in first position had a lien of $14,000.
Well, the documents would indicate that the lien was filed in the amount of $14,000.
But to proceed as it did, the trial court had to accept that there was a $14,000 lien, or they wouldn't have been able to give you the $7,100 and whatever at the beginning.
At the beginning.
You haven't challenged that factual finding that there was a $14,000 lien. Neither of your assignments of error attack that as a factual finding, correct?
No, that is not correct, I don't believe. I'd have to pull out the assignments again if I can, but I can point to throughout the brief.
I understand that there's argument. My question is, does either of your assignments of error say the trial court erred in finding there was a $14,000 lien on the property?
Your Honor, I'm assuming that you've read that more carefully, and the answer to that is the assignment does not.
All right.
Do I think that that solves or answers the ultimate question? No.
But I do think, and I agree with you on that, but I think it frames it. If we assume there's a $14,000 first priority lien ahead of you, until it is satisfied or extinguished, you have no property interest that's executable.
We have a property interest, and I think this is also finding in the recent Supreme Court case, the Tyler case of Hennepin County in Minnesota, we have a property interest in the equity that was available under the property.
If the statute read differently, if it said under your theory and assuming the $14,000 deed of trust being superior, if the statute provided that the city had to hold it, that $14,000 is unclaimed property indefinitely, would you have any takings argument whatsoever?
Yes. You cannot, by state law, and again, this is clearly mandated by the U.S. Supreme Court, particularly in the Phillips case.
If the city had to hold it for the first deed of trust holder?
The first deed of trust holder, if it had to be held in perpetuity, perhaps we wouldn't. However, at that point, we could have come in and contested the lien.
But under 3967, does the City of Richmond have an ordinance that allows them the unfettered government discretion to satisfy the Jones lien?
To satisfy, I'm sorry, I could not hear.
The Jones lien? The first lien?
The city ordinance would be, of course, subservient to what the state law is.
The statute permits the city to keep the money and to give it to the first lien or that didn't show up within the first 2 years.
Correct.
If in their merciful judgment they decide to give it, but there's no requirement that the government give it to the Jones lien.
However, and I can appreciate the argument, what I suggest is that the first liener did not come in and prove the actual existence of the lien.
I don't want you to misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm in part agreeing with one part of your argument, which is that if the $14,000 had been held like an interpleader case for an unknown beneficiary and it had not been extinguished or it had not been abandoned in any way, then of course there'd have to be an adjudication of whether or not that lien is valid, because your lien is on the property. It's not on any cash. It's on the entire property.
Correct.
We wouldn't have subordinate liens and priority liens if we weren't talking about the same race in common law or in equity. But the question I'm asking you is, in the city of Richmond, is there an ordinance, because the statute refers to an ordinance, that says to the city of Richmond, after you guys take this money, which you have absolutely no claim to otherwise, it's no claim to the $14,000 of the city of Richmond, you can give it back to the Jones people if they show up late after the 2 years. But you don't have to, and you can only do it if you have an ordinance saying that you can. So question, do they have such an ordinance?
Do they have to?
Do they have such an ordinance?
Again, Your Honor, I'm assuming that you've read the ordinance, that that's precisely what it says. However,
the ordinance or the statute?
The statute does not say that.
Okay. Well, I think Justice Kelsey's question goes to the last sentence of the statute, and it seems to me that if the first lien holder were to show up and say, we'd like our $14,000, the city council, under the statute, could adopt an ordinance right then and there and grant them the $14,000. Do you agree with that?
The last sentence, I'm sorry.
Upon request of the former owner, his heirs or assigns or unknown beneficiary of any real estate sold under this article, and after a showing of prior entitlement thereto, the governing body of any county or city which has received such surplus funds may in its discretion grant relief by ordinance to such former owner, heir or assign or unknown beneficiary and pay over such amount as the governing body may deem appropriate to such former owner, heir, assign, or unknown beneficiary.
They would have to show a prior right to be repaid.
The lien.
Correct. They would have to show that that hadn't been satisfied or that it still remained to be paid. So if we look at that question from the issue of, let's say they're given an opportunity to come forward and they don't come forward again, does it sit in perpetuity?
Well,
the more central question, in this case, the city of Richmond took it. It took the $14,000.
Well, this sentence assumes they've taken it. It says they've taken it. The question is, but I guess the question is, doesn't this statutory language, even if they're not entitled to the $14,000 by right, assuming the lien is valid, which I think we have to in this case, given the record we have, assuming the lien for $14,000 is valid and assuming the first lien holder still has some interest in it. They may not be able to force the city to pay them back, but unlike me, I can't come and ask for the $14,000, adopt an ordinance, give me the $14,000. But this statute specifically authorizes the first deed of trust holder to do that, doesn't it?
The language that you suggest would seem to me it would be a violation of an ipso facto law in that the two-year statute for them asserting a claim ran. That's why the money was held for 2 years. That was the statute of limitations, and once that statute of limitations run, they no longer have a claim to that money. So the second or the predicate for that last sentence would never exist. They could not come forward and show they had a valid lien.
I think where all of the questions you're getting and the answers are a bit talking past each other, that last provision says that if Jones people show up and they go, look, you know, the heirs are all over the United States, we finally found them all, and yeah, it was never paid, and here's our testimony, and it's clear it was never paid. The statute clearly says if the government wants to give them the money, they can. The statute, however, and this is the part I don't like, says, well, if you wake up that morning and decide not to give it to it, just stick it in your coffers, even though your lien is on the entire amount.
The statute is the problem. You cannot just simply take it from a valid lien holder who has a constitutionally protected right.
Well, you could. I'm sorry to interrupt. You could, as has been pointed out, if you're giving it to the prior lien holder. But if the prior lien holder doesn't show up and is never going to show up and you're not going to give it to him anyway, even if he does show up, then it's nothing but a trick. You get to keep it and laugh your way all the way out.
Well, the city doesn't get to keep it, correct? And,
yeah.
And not put it in their coffers.
But the problem we're all struggling with is what happens, no matter what we decide, if the Jones people show up tomorrow and go, you know, we finally found the heirs, and daggone, the $14,000 wasn't paid. We're going to ask you for it back?
I'm sure a clever lawyer could figure out a way to sue my client for the proceeds for which they received that they shouldn't have because they were an inferior lien holder.
To avoid the constitutional question, could we read the statute as the $14,000 that the trial court set aside for the first lien holder satisfied that lien, and the money was held for a minimum of 2 years for the benefit of the priority lien holder, and if it didn't show up, that lien holder forfeited the money to the city?
Yes, and I think that was what I was trying to suggest, probably inartfully, is that they have lost their right to assert that there is any lien. It's been extinguished.
Well, right.
Well, you just conceded something away there. Under your argument, as I read your brief, they don't forfeit it to the city. They forfeit it to whoever else is in line, which would be your client.
Correct.
The city has no property interest.
It has no property in at all and cannot take it. And in this case, the city has taken it.
Your view of this is not that the lien holder, the first lien holder, was satisfied and then forfeited it. It's that you had the right to it all along because they never showed up.
I'm willing to go either direction on that. If the argument is that they got it, it was satisfied, they didn't come and get the money, that means that money's still available as surplus.
Not if it's forfeited to the city, which under Nelson is a possible, if there's no subsequent lien holder, is clearly constitutional under your argument.
Nelson is a case about due process, obviously, and what it says is if you give everyone due process, how did we get due process in that option?
You got all the rights to the proceeds that the second position lien holder was entitled to if every lien was fully satisfied.
If that was a valid lien. Let's look at the situation.
But you didn't challenge in the proceeding below that it wasn't a valid lien, and you didn't challenge that on appeal. So aren't we stuck with the assumption that the $14,000 is a valid lien?
Your Honor, I can say on the record that was objected to, and it was specifically reserved, if you look at the statement of facts, that we still have the right to make a claim against those remaining proceeds. It wasn't adjudicated. So, in my view, that's not been an adjudicated issue.
So it could be a valid lien that was extinguished by the two-year statute, and then the government's got the money. They don't have any interest in the money at all.
Correct.
They got all of their bill paid.
Correct.
And they can say to themselves, well, if the Jones show up, we'll give it to them if we feel like it. So the question is, does the Fifth Amendment have a problem with that?
Yeah, I have a problem with that in terms of the Constitution. In terms of the Constitution has a problem with that. If you looking at the most recent Tyler claim case, we have an interest in the entire equity.
I think that's the part that was missed in some of the briefing. I'll ask your colleague on the other side. Your interest is not in the 7,171. Your interest is in the entire scope.
Correct.
of the deed and the lien that was filed, which is the entire property, the beneficial
correct.
Interest in the property. Can I switch gears for just 1 minute?
Yes, sir.
The statute, this is not something the briefs helped me with. The statute says this is a bill in equity proceeding. Well, that is a historic proceeding that has 1,000 years of English background to it. And it does involve things like interpleader actions, what we would call modern interpleader actions that adjudicates rights among competing claimants. I mean, that's one of the reasons for equity, is to be able to do that. But that really wasn't done below. You made the argument it should be done, but it wasn't done below. Would one remedy that you're seeking be, or have you, if you've preserved it, that you should be given an opportunity to litigate the validity.
Correct. Yes.
And if the Jones, if there are Joneses out there, it's like a deck action. If there's any Jones out there, they can show up. You give them all the due process notice you can, and they don't show up.
Correct. That's exactly where I was going with the due process. We haven't had due process because we did everything that we could do throughout to protect our rights. If they hold on to the money and say, we're holding it for future use, I see my time is up.
Well, with the Chief's permission, may I ask one more question? So there are two issues in this sequence of questions. There's the takings issue, which is not a procedural due process issue. And there's procedural due process, which is, well, maybe you can take it, but you just got to be fair about it, you know, give them some hearing, give them evidence, give them witnesses, et cetera, give them a court. You clearly have preserved the Fifth Amendment point, and it's a powerful point, I might add. I'm asking you now, was it very clear to the trial court that that trial court needed to say to him or herself, itself, really, I'm in a bill of equity situation, I need to have evidence of whether or not this Jones lien is ever going to be reclaimed, because I'm not giving it to the government. They don't have any business taking this money. And I have no idea that if I gave it to the government, they give it to the Joneses if they showed up later. So I'll give them notice and take care of it. Did that argument get made to the trial court? Because it would blindside the trial court if we said, that's what you should have done.
The argument, if you, again, I think it's contained within the statement of facts, where it does suggest what was presented to the trial court. But yes, they were told that we have an interest in the entire amount, not just the $14,000.
Yes, of course, unless it's superseded by a prior lien.
Correct. So we need to have the right to litigate whether that is, in fact, a superior lien, and we have not had an opportunity to do so.
Okay, so that was preserved from your perspective.
I know it was argued. I would have to go back, since that was not a question I have to freely admit I did that I anticipated. I'd have to go back and look at the record to make
Thank
sure
you.
It was properly preserved.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. I'm Deputy City Attorney Greg Lukanowski, counsel for Appellee City of Richmond. The issue in this case is whether the trial court was correct in its interpretation of a single statute, Virginia Code Section 58.1, 3967, when it denied, as Mr. Young has told us, his client Appellant Caudill's trust claim for funds which were paid into court for a superior lien holder.
Did the Caudill litigant ask the trial court to adjudicate whether or not there is in fact any evidence that the Jones lien is enforceable? Obviously it's a valid lien, it's been filed, it's in the deed book, but is it enforceable? Is there anyone there to enforce it? Because obviously they didn't show up when the proper notice was made for this proceeding.
That issue was not raised with the trial court.
Suppose they had, under your argument, because I'm reading your argument to be broader than this. Suppose they had said, look, of course the Jones lien trumps us out, but they're not here in 2 years, and you can't keep it for eternity, and then decide whether or not in benevolence of the government to give it to the proper people. So we need to do basically an interpleader, a bill in equity, and we'll find out. We'll make a deck action out of it. And if they don't show up now, then I'll hold that they abandon their lien. Was that ever presented to the trial court? Because that seems to me to be the way to handle these cases.
That specific issue was not handled in this case, but I have seen it handled in other cases in which an inferior lien holder, mm-hmm. actually an heir of the owner of the property came forward and said, well, this lien was paid, therefore
it happens
the
all
heir
the
should
time.
Get the money.
I mean, people pay off liens all the time and don't go through the process of getting the deed book fixed. Okay, so one last question for me, hostile question for me, is when I read your brief, it seemed to me you were arguing that, look, they don't have any property interest at all in the $14,000. And as soon as I read it, I went, that can't be right. Obviously, they have a property interest in the entire property. They don't have an interest in money. They have an interest in the race, and the race has been sold. So the priority statutes presuppose that competing prior lienors and subordinate lienors are talking about the same thing. They're on the same playing field. But you say, no, there's no property under the Fifth Amendment or the 14th Amendment because they have a prior lien. I just don't understand that argument.
Well, where a takings clause claim starts is by the plaintiff must show that they had a property interest in what was taken. What was taken in this case was the $14,000.
$14,000 is the sales price that of the property. They had a property interest in the property, and they had a property interest in the proceeds of the sale by the very language of the lien, and of course by equity law anyway.
This court has held otherwise. As Justice McCullough stated 3 years ago in Johnson versus City of Suffolk, the existence of a property interest is determined by reference to independent sources of law, usually state law. So, let's look at Virginia Code and what it tells us about what Caldwell Trust owned. What they owned was a lien. The city did not impair that lien. Caldwell Trust still owns that lien.
How can you say you didn't impair the lien when you took the money that they had a lien on? That seems like that's impairing it a bit.
Your position is they didn't have a lien on the first, although they had a lien on the entire property given the order of payout, the first $14,000 went to the first lien holder. Now, whether the first lien holder ever shows up to collect it, or whether the first lien holder assigns it to somebody else, or whether the first lien holder forfeits it to the city, they can't reach that until the first lien holder is satisfied.
Why can't they reach that once the first lien holder's lien has been extinguished according to 3967? Doesn't 3967 indicate it's extinguished if they don't file within 2 years?
No, it does not.
Why doesn't it, if it is within the city's discretion, to pay it to them? They no longer have a right to it if you all can decide it, or the city can decide whether to pay it to them.
What 3967 tells us is that if money is unclaimed from the tax sale of a property, the city pays the money into court, as it did in this case.
But it's not unclaimed. They claim it. And all they want to do is adjudicate whether or not someone under the priority statute can claim it ahead of them. It's not that they don't have something they can claim. They just got to have a contest between two claimants who are competing over the same residue or money paid out over the lien that they both had on the same property.
What happened in this case was the city sold the property. There had been no answers filed claiming any money by anybody. So what the city did was it took the money from the sale, paid off first the taxes, the legal fees, then it paid the $14,000 in for the first lien holder and the $7,100 in for Caldwell Trust.
But it didn't pay it into them, did it? It held it for them.
No.
To claim.
If I may, the registry of the trial court holds the fund for 2 years. During that two-year time period, that's when Caldwell Trust claim the funds by filing a motion.
What happens to the first lien holder if they don't file within the 2 years? The money is paid to the city, and the city can then decide whether it will pay it should the unknown beneficiaries show up. So if they can decide whether they will pay it, the unknown beneficiaries no longer have a property interest in those monies. Is that correct? Correct read?
The property owner, the lien holders, no longer have a property interest in that money once the two-year time period has elapsed.
Well, that's just the point. The Jones people, when they show up one day after the two-year period and they say, please, 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 you can just say, no, today is a Wednesday. We don't do this on Wednesdays. We're going to keep the money. And the statute allows you to do that. So how do they have a property interest to enforce at all? All they can do is beg you for the money back, and you can give them a gift. This statute is a clever way of getting around, seems to me, the decision that was just issued down by the U.S. Supreme Court.
The decision by the U.S. Supreme Court was very different. Why? The decision by this U.S. Supreme Court involved surplus to a property owner. As Chief Justice Roberts pointed out in Tyler versus Hennepin County, what happened in that case? Property is sold for $40,000. $15,000 goes to the locality for payment of taxes and legal fees, leaving a surplus $25,000. Chief Justice Roberts pointed out, well, who owns that money? That case cited the Magna Carta to go back for over 800 years of common law that the surplus goes to and is property of the property owner. And a vagary of Minnesota law could not change that. Chief Justice Roberts also pointed out...
Don't you think a mortgage company having a lien on a property has a property interest in the property?
No, they have an interest in the mortgage, and that property interest is enforced
in the
foreclosure.
Okay, they don't have a property interest?
They have a property interest, yes, it's part of the bundle of rights.
A lien, by definition, is a property interest. That's how we define it.
The lien itself is the property interest, that is true. Not the money.
It proceeds from the lien or simply the sale of the lien. It doesn't lose its interest when it becomes cash. If that were true, we would have a condemnation case and we say, well, you could have asked for condemnation recovery, but we just sold it to somebody else.
Counsel, going back to Justice Powell's question, where you seem to say that they have no interest at all, I can't go to the city of Richmond and say, give me the $14,000 by ordinance today. But they can under the statute, right? The General Assembly has specifically authorized the city of Richmond, if it chooses, may not choose to give the Jones folks the $14,000. They're not authorized to give it to me. So clearly Jones has some interest. It may not be automatically enforceable. It may not be enforceable over a contrary decision by the city, but they have an interest that the general public does not have in that $14,000.
I mean, an interest to beg? I mean, is that what they have?
I'm sorry, an interest to?
To beg the city to give them the money.
What we
they have
know,
no right to it.
What we know from the statute is, it's clear, if money is paid in the court, as the city did, as the trial court ordered, and it goes unclaimed, the city then may claim it, and then we have this final
sentence.
So
is it your position that the Jones heirs, or whomever the successors in interest are to the Jones lien, if they showed up after this hearing at City Hall and said, we'd like our $14,000 and we think we can prove that it was never really paid, would you be able to say, well, we may or may not give it to you, but we recognize that you do have a property interest in the $14,000. Would you say that? Or would you say, no, you don't have a property interest?
I'm saying that
you forfeited it by not filing within 2 years.
The money is cheated to the city at this point. However,
would the Jones claimants have a property interest 2 years and a day to claim the $14,000 in cash out of your bank account?
That's a very good question, because there's clearly an interest in the statute. I write in the statute for the Jones heirs at this point.
Would they have a property interest in claiming the $14,000 2 years and a day?
I don't know if that would be defined as a property interest or not. It's a very good question.
So you don't have a position on that?
On that, after the 2 years have elapsed?
Right. Do they have a property interest in claiming the $14,000 after the forfeiture of the two-year statute?
What I know is the statute makes clear that the Jones party could claim it per the statute. Whether or not that's per se a property interest,
I don't see how it is, if it's entirely within the discretion of the city to say, yeah, we'll do this, or no, we don't want to do that. I mean, a property interest, you have a legal enforceable right, as opposed to you can come begging and say, well, you know, in your mercy, city, give us the money. That doesn't sound like a property interest.
And assuming that they don't have a property interest, the Joneses, how could the city ever take priority to those funds over the Caldwells?
Because the Virginia Code tells us it does. The Virginia Code tells us after 2 years of the money sitting in the registry of the court, the city may claim it.
Well, the Fifth Amendment says something slightly pushing back on that. So putting aside the statute, the question is, does the Fifth Amendment incorporated through the 14th say, yeah, no, government, you can't pull that one? You got to give it to whoever's in front of you that has a property interest in it, if it's not your money otherwise.
We know that there's the 1956 New York City case holding that surpluses, as long as you've had procedural due process.
Talking
that
about Nelson?
Yes.
Well, okay, great. I don't know if Nelson helps you. I think it hurts you.
What procedural due process did Caldwell have to the $14,000?
Caldwell received notice of the city's complaint after the funds from the sale had been deposited with the court. Caldwell filed a motion to receive its $7,100 on his lien.
To the 14, what procedural due process that they have to the 14?
Before the 2 years had expired, when the statute says the city should get the money, Caldwell filed a motion requesting that it also receive the $14,000, and that was the order from the trial court that we're here about today.
So they did preserve it. They flat out said, I want the 14, I want a little bit of hearing to find out if it's a legit lien or whether it's one of dozens we deal with in real estate practice all the time. They just sat there and no one actually filed their proper documents to take it off.
Yes.
Regardless of what they argued below, the trial court clearly found, as a matter of fact, there was a valid $14,000 lien in first position. That explains everything it did. If it didn't make that factual finding, nothing it did makes sense. And no assignment of error challenges that factual finding, correct?
Yes.
Are they challenging whether there was a valid $14,000 lien at the beginning, or are they challenging that the statute extinguished that lien and now they have priority over the city to that $14,000? Isn't that their argument?
I believe Caldwell's argument is found on page 15 of their brief, but when Caldwell has written the unknown Jones beneficiary rights, that's the $14,000, if any, terminated for failure to file a claim. I agree with that part.
That's exactly what Justice Powell asked you.
But leaving the Caldwell Trust lien is the only valid lien of record in the disputed tax sale proceeds, that's not true, because you'll note Caldwell gives us no citations questioning the city receiving the money under the statute. And that is also true in the reply brief.
By statute, the tax lien wasn't the first lien. The tax lien was given priority by statute.
Yes.
So if the city has a lien on the $14,000 by operation of statute, that can be okay.
Yes.
But it doesn't.
Only if
because
it doesn't violate the Constitution.
No, it does not violate the Constitution, Madam
Justice. It's got to, because they've already gotten their money for their lien. The tax lien had already been paid. So it was extinguished.
May I answer that very good question this way, which is, run a thought experiment where instead of a city tax sale case, Caldwell Trust had enforced its judgment lien by moving to sell the property. What would have happened then? First money out would have been from the sale, legal fees, then city taxes. After that, next paid would have been the $14,000, then Caldwell. Well,
no,
what happened?
The next paid would only be paid $14,000 to Jones if he's in the courtroom or whoever is in the courtroom. But if they're not there, it is, and they'd be given notice, they forfeit the lien. We don't hold open bills in equity for sales of property for eternity, which is what the statute seems to do for the city.
Only if there is an action to quiet title that's brought by whoever's attempting to enforce the lien, that's true. Though what I've also seen happen is the money will be held by the court.
In a judicial, I'm sorry, Chief, may I ask one last question? In a quiet title action, to be sure what you're saying, but this is not a quiet title action, but quiet title issues arise all the time in judicial sales of property. I mean, all the time. And almost every circuit judge on this bench has seen that before. And what we do is we adjudicate it. We just don't go, oh, there's a lien here. Okay, who should I give it to? The government. That's convenient. The statute says that. We litigate it to find out if that prior lien is enforceable. It's obviously valid. It's in the book, and no one's claiming it's a fraud. So you have three liens in this case, a tax lien, a first preferred, and a subordinate. And the first preferred doesn't show up, you get your lien fully satisfied, and they don't get their lien fully satisfied. Why should you get the money as opposed to them?
Because Virginia Code Section 58.13967 says if money has been paid into court and goes unclaimed, the locality may claim it.
That's a great answer. My second last question, what does the Fifth Amendment say? The Fifth Amendment say, oh, we're good with that, no problem.
Fifth Amendment tells us that as long as there has been due process of your property that has been taken, I would argue Caldwell Trust property is its lien, not the money. A lien is not money. A lien is a right to collect money. not the same thing.
Thank you. Appreciate your answer.
Thank you very much, counsel. This court is adjourned.